Welcome to episode one of the podcast, which currently has no name. It's hosted by Dan Clark, founder of Ubik, a company that brings data-driven technology to websites for schools, and me. I'm Simon Jones. I run the Bonjour agency. We also provide services to schools. That's how Dan and I know each other. But this is not about schools. It's about scaling up businesses. So let's get into this episode right now. Dan, here we are, episode one of the podcast with no name. I'm glad that we found time to be together to record this. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, me too. I'm really excited.
So tell me whereabouts in the world you are.
So I'm actually in London at the moment. So I kind of split my time between the Isle of Wight, London, and quite a lot of time in Dubai. Haven't seen you out there, but know you're there now. So hopefully we'll be able to connect.
Yeah, no, exactly that. For people listening, I've just told Dan before we hit record that I'm in Dubai at the moment. When you come out to Dubai, whereabouts do you normally stay in the city?
So we're normally by Jumeirah Beach. If you know the address hotel, that's where kind of our place to go. That's where we like to be. And I use it actually to disconnect from the business generally and take a week to plan for the future, to do the strategic work. And I found that as I've been able to remove myself from the usual places that I do day-to-day work, it's become an easy way of kind of disconnecting. So, you know, the sunbed and a laptop is my go-to in Dubai.
All right. That's good to hear. It's good to hear. The address, I think that's the place at the bottom of the palm. Is that right?
Yeah, it's the one with the big kind of bit missing in the middle of it. So it's got a big chunk taken out. And if you've ever been to the rooftop bar, it's one of the most incredible places you'll ever be. It's so, so high up and it's got a pool up there that you can only stay in if you're a hotel resident, I think. But one of the most exquisite places on earth, I'm sure.
I was about to say, I've still got 5 days left. I could check it out. But if I'm not staying there, then clearly I can't. I'll Google it instead, Dan. I'll Google it instead. Right, this podcast, here we are, episode number one. Why are we doing this? What was it that you were keen about with the pair of us hosting this podcast? Because, I mean, this is very much the pair of us hosting this. I mean, I'm only kind of leading us through it only because I run a business that leads people through podcasts. But it's the pair of us doing this together. Why were you keen on doing this?
Yeah, it's a good question. Well, I think I've got some interesting insights to give. I've been through a number of businesses that have been successful, and I've kind of proved to myself that I guess I know what I'm doing. And I seem to have, I don't want to say a formula, but a methodology maybe that works. And as I've kind of got a little older, more and more people have come to me that I know and said, you know, could you share this with me? Could you be a mentor? Could you do, you know, tell me how you did this bit or that bit, or how do I get funding? All kinds of questions like that I get all day long from different people that I know within education and outside of it. And I thought, well, I think I've probably got some interesting things to say. I don't think that I'm quite book worthy. I've thought about it, but I thought, you know, a conversation where you can kind of play off your different ideas and thoughts about how to do things could be quite interesting. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm coming from, really. I don't know if I've got anything interesting to say or not, but maybe.
Well, I'm sure that you will. I mean, the pair of us are at different stages in our businesses. You know, I guess you could summarize that by saying that I'm running a business which is six figures, you're running a business which is seven figures or eight figures, I'm not sure.
Let's call it eight.
Eight, very nice, very nice.
Eight. We're doing pretty well.
All right, that's good. And in fact, in future episodes, we're going to dive a little bit deeper into each of our businesses. But again, just for people listening, give us a snapshot about what Ubik does, how many people you employ, anything else that you're happy sharing so that people get an idea of context as to what kind of company you're running.
Yeah, okay. When did we start? We started at the beginning of 21. So, you know, as businesses go, we're in the relatively early stages. You would say you're in that kind of infancy. We surpassed kind of break even very early, which is highly unusual for a startup. And our kind of, I guess, my vision was to, I guess, disrupt, mess up the market. That's what I like doing. I don't do that for fun. It's not, you know, it's not a kind of vindictive thing, but it's how can I transform this market by 10 years? How can I kind of move forward by such a large jump that what's being done today just looks like it's archaic and not fit for purpose? And with the pace of technology, with the pace of AI, machine learning, the things around us, that allows a company like us to sit there with a blank piece of paper and say, well, if we wanted to create something better, what would better look like? And that's exactly what we did with our platform. And we began with thinking, okay, data is the real linchpin of that. It's going to be the future. You know, decision making based upon guesswork, based upon how we feel or think, isn't going to give us the results we need. And we need to professionalize this industry in a way that's never been professionalized before. Talk the same language that we see and hear outside of education, and start talking that inside of education. So broadly speaking, that was the kind of vision. Obviously, there's a lot of kind of technical that then goes into building a platform and the functionality that we've put together on that. We're 70, 75 people, I think, maybe slightly more.
75?
Yeah, we've grown pretty quickly in a short space of time.
Yeah, the last time I talked to you about how many people in your company was not long ago, and it definitely wasn't 75. That's fast growth.
Yes, and of course we're always, I guess, equipping for the next stage of our business. So I learned a harsh lesson in my previous company. We were hugely, hugely successful in a very short space of time, but we weren't equipped for it. So, you know, product quality struggled at times. The ability to deliver at the high standard that we were trying to deliver at suffered as well. And so the lesson I kind of took from that one that has gone into this one is be ahead of the game in terms of your staffing and infrastructure. Have the people there for the next growth stage. We will probably grow, we haven't got the final numbers in, 70% this year, something like that, on last year. And we'll probably do the same again next year. So naturally, the staff rate's growing at the same stage as well. So yeah, we're in an interesting stage of business growth, an exciting one.
So some of the people listening to this will be running their own businesses. Some of them will be larger than yours. Some of them are around about the same size, some of them smaller. And the audience knows that my business is smaller than yours. I mean, I don't employ 75 people. It's more like, 7.5 people if I was to use a differential like that. And some of the issues and problems that I run into will, I imagine, be very different to the problems and issues that you run into. For people listening, my business, I help people start their own podcast, and I also work with school marketing teams to provide content for them for their social media. Often that's photography and video, sometimes by me going into the school, other times me providing a service remotely to the school, which is quite good fun. That means I can be anywhere in the world, which is quite good. One of the problems that I'm often trying to resolve myself is how I can scale a business, especially when I'm the person who's doing a big chunk of the work myself. And people listening to this right now may well be in the similar situation where they're either doing all of the work, they're the operator in their business, or they're outsourcing some parts of it, but they're still a key component in the day-to-day delivery of the service that they provide. Therefore, they're kind of getting in their own way. Definitely that's the case with me. But talk to me a little bit about scaling up, some of the challenges that you've experienced in the past, and what you see in other businesses today.
Yeah, well, I've definitely been where you've been with my first business, and that was kind of where I learned my lessons. You know, it took me 13, 14 years to build the same size of business I've already built in 3 years. So needless to say, lessons were learned that allowed scalability to happen much quicker. One of the things kind of I mentioned earlier was the fact that as a founder, entrepreneur, whatever you want to call it, you have to make sure that you're working on the business as well as in the business, and they're two very separate tasks that you have to do as a leader. If you get sucked into working on the business, in the business too much and not on the business enough, then you're just doing the day to day, and you're never doing the strategic thinking. You can't ever really get ahead. You're just kind of playing catch up all of the time. And so it's breaking that loop, which recognizing it is one aspect, but I think then doing something about it is tricky, because there's not often the funds to just step back, pay someone else, and not have to worry about it. And so, you know, the lesson I learned from my previous company was to make sure that we had sufficient funding. That's one of the things we did very, very early in this business, is went out and got the money to fund the right people in the right roles. I'd like to say, you know, I can sell. Of course I can. I'm good at it, but I've got better salespeople than me. I can do marketing, but again, there's people that can do marketing better than me. So putting those people in place allows me to take the step back to be able to effectively work on the business and stop working in it. And, you know, I've always had this concept of making myself redundant. So whatever I'm doing today, I need to stop doing. I need to effectively find someone else that can do it, and I need to take another step back if I can, and perpetually be doing that. So when it was me, Ubik, and a couple of other people on day one, you know, I was the sales guy, I was the product manager, I was the CTO, I was also a bit of the CFO and a few other things in between. As time has lapsed, and you know, all those people that we've employed, they're there to fulfill a job that allows me to take that step back and to do a better job than I can, because, you know, I don't care what people say about technology. It's the people that matter. That's what builds this amazing company that we've got at Ubik. It's not the technology. The technology comes secondary to finding the right, the best people, letting them do their stuff with a vision and a guiding star, and taking that step back and supporting them to be able to achieve their goals and reach their potential. And that becomes my job. My job as a facilitator, that's the way I see it, is to make sure that my team are motivated, that they understand the broad direction that the company's going in, and that everything that might get in their way and stop them from being effective is taken away. Those roadblocks, they need to come to me when they encounter those, be it an internal issue, be it a customer-facing issue, whatever. And then I need to work with them to figure out and undo that block so that they can be as effective as possible. And then the rest kind of takes care of itself, I find. Business has a funny way of solving problems for you. If you just have that Northern Star, you get everybody aligned with it and you go after it, and then you make sure there's sufficient funds to be able to facilitate that. The rest goes, you know, takes care of itself. I've never really done a 5-year plan. I've never done a 3-year plan. I'm surprisingly awful at even doing the year plan that I'm in, because I think that, you know, planning kind of almost is a waste of time. Doing is more important for me to be able to then deliver on the kind of goals. And I just find that we surpass what I would have planned anyway by just focusing on our kind of broader direction and not getting too caught up in numbers for the month, numbers for the week, how many sales, how many schools. If you ask me generally about that, I don't happen to tend to know the answer. I just know we're doing good. We're going in a direction. We're fulfilling the promise that we set out at the beginning. Sorry, I digress very slightly from the topic there. But
Dan, honestly, so much to unpack in all of that, and so much we could talk about. But in fact, I'm thinking about future episodes, and some of this content is going to be great for, you know, for unpacking in a future episode, such as, for example, having an episode purely dedicated to funding, because you've mentioned it twice in the last 5 minutes. Because one of the common issues that founders have of a small business, we often hear this, is them having the ability to let go. But those kinds of things are things that we can, you know, train ourselves to be a little bit better at. But do you think that all of those kinds of things, you know, prioritizing, time management, letting go of certain tasks that, you know, other people might do 90% of the ability that you could have done it, do you think that all of that is actually fruitless if a small business doesn't look to get funding so that they can actually reach out to employ other people in the first place?
Yeah, it's investment funding is the lifeblood to the growth. And that's what I learned from the first business. We only ever grew organically prior to that. And that was a much slower rate of growth, because what you make in profit per year, every bit of it went back in. But 10, 13 years time, you know, we're the same size business as we are in 3. And the difference is the funding. It's not that I've become, you know, better at my job, or that some of my team are more effective than they were the last time. Maybe they are, maybe they're not, but that's not really the reason for the dial moving so much greater. That's the funding behind it, because that allows you to fuel the growth, allows you to build the teams, and it allows you to get to a point where you can be strategic, or you can start to think about where this business needs to go. And, you know, if I go back to the day one and the plan and the stuff that I wrote down on, you know, paper for my dev team of this is what we're going to build and this is where we're going to go, it's not the same as where we're at today. We've maneuvered, you know, the kind of, you know, industry word is pivoted, but we've maneuvered a number of times as the customer has told us what they need, as we've spotted other opportunities and other areas in which we can kind of go. And that's all facilitated by the funds that allow us to be able to then do that. Because if you're stuck with, you know, just trying to live off what you've got in terms of revenue, which is always very small at the beginning, because naturally you don't have the growth yet to facilitate the spending, then you're always kind of compromising. And, you know, you don't want to be compromising if you're going to go up against big industry competitors that have the resources to effectively do the things that you want to do. So you have to be able to, for a short space of time, have the funding in place to be able to compete, to then be able to get your revenue up to a point where you don't need to then need that funding. So it's always a race to make sure that you can fill that gap and build those revenues to the extent that you can then live off your own fuel, which we've done, you know, very, very quickly, unbelievably quickly. You know, last year we broke even, which is crazy for a business, but you might not expect to make money for 3, 4, 5 years in a kind of software tech business. And that's perfectly fine, as long as the kind of growth level is enough that you've got a way out, you can see sustainability at some point. But yeah, for me, if we would still be 10 people in a room if I hadn't taken any funding or invested myself in this business substantially. Instead, we're 70 and, you know, doing more than 100 schools per year globally, which is pretty crazy for year three.
One of the things I remember back in the day when people used to like Donald Trump, and I'm not saying that everyone dislikes Donald Trump, but a good number of people listening to this probably aren't his biggest fans, let's put it that way. But before he was running for, well, running in US politics, he was kind of liked and admired and respected, certainly in the world of business, by a lot of people. And I remember one of the things he said back then was, whatever I do, I think big. I'm going to get the exact words wrong. Whatever I do, I think big. Most people think small. That's my competitive advantage. Do you think that most people in the UK, around the world, people who are running their own businesses, that we do tend to think too small sometimes?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. You know, you can't make a too big a ask. That's one of my kind of thoughts and things that I say in terms of, you know, if I'm valuing my company, it's going to be as high as I can possibly value it, because that's of benefit to everybody within my organization for that to be the case. Now, someone might not agree, but I only need to find one person that agrees, really. You know, it doesn't matter whether 99% don't agree and 1% do. The 1% that do is the person that I want to be working with and I want to potentially bring in as an investor. So from my perspective, yeah, especially you mentioned in the UK, I think it's a thing about the UK is to kind of keep our ask small, be modest, apologize lots of times for the ask, and don't be as bold as we could be in terms of, well, I'm going to do this and it's going to look like this. And then this is going to bring back this in the future. And this thing over here is going to be huge. I think that's the problem. And I think the other thing, and you see this all the time, is that people ask for investment without really justifying the return. It's the classic kind of Dragon's Den piece that you see all the time is, you know, they go in and they say, I want X, you know, and I value the company at Y. And then, you know, the person, the dragon, says to them, well, okay, well, how am I ever going to get my money back? Because I've just done the calculation and, you know, in 25 years time, I still won't be paid back. How does that work? And you've got to think about that. And what the return looks like. It's all very well me saying my business is going to be worth this and it's going to look like this, but actually, have you thought about the investor, what it is that they're looking to get out of it and how you're going to get them that? Because they're not putting their money in for a laugh. They're not thinking, let's just back Simon or Dan for, you know, 100,000, 200,000, 300,000. Doesn't matter whether I get it back. They want to see a return and a pathway to that return, which I think is really important. And I think that's one of the other mistakes that get made. The ask is too small, and then it's not really backed up with a, how do I get this back? And I would say that when I talk to investors, I'm pretty fortunate in that I know lots of people. I'm very well networked in that space anyway. But when I do, I'm very clear with them that, you know, and I was very clear with them that UBIC would be worth over 100 million within 5 years. That was our goal and our objective. We're well on the way for that goal and objective. But they knew what that meant for them as a return. And that had to be better than just leaving the money in the bank and getting 5% or whatever it is that they could have done with their money other than invested it with me. Hopefully they think that that's a good investment, and they're going to get their money back. But you know, my point being, yeah, the asks are often very modest, and they're not backed up with a way out for the investor, and there has to be a way out.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to that particular episode on the podcast. Not sure which number that's going to be, but that's not going to be too far in the future. I can feel that already. Let's bring it back to the podcast for a minute then, Dan.
Yep.
In terms of future guests we could bring on, who would you be keen? I mean, you know, I was going to say the sky's the limit, actually. You know, but, you know, putting aside for a moment, getting the likes of Elon Musk or Richard Branson on, which could be good maybe for episode 10, but maybe before then, what kind of people do you think would be good for us to bring on to the podcast?
Well, the big topic on everybody's lips at the moment is the kind of AI machine learning space. And I think that's an interesting one to potentially explore from a business perspective, because I think that when we talk about that as a topic, we're not necessarily talking about AI machine learning companies. We're talking about how that touches every organization and something that for, as a business owner, we have to be kind of thinking about and integrating and interwoving into our companies. So that's an interesting one. I think, you know, because both of our backgrounds are in marketing, we should look for some interesting marketing businesses, maybe outside a sector. I always think that it's good and very helpful to spend as little time in my own sector as possible and as much time elsewhere looking at other organizations, whether they've got any relationship with mine or not, doesn't really matter to me, to look to see whether there's, I guess, snippets of information that I can take and apply to what I'm doing. So I kind of look at it from that perspective and say, well, who can we get in as guests that are going to give us a new perspective on running a business that could give us something to work on, to go with, to strategize about, because that's what interests me. I listen to various podcasts, and you know, my partner says to me, you know, was it a good one? Did I enjoy it? And I said, well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I did, but I'm looking for that like one thing that I can pull out of each one and apply to me and my existence, whether it's my kind of mental health, whether it's getting into the gym more and being physically stronger, or whether it's having a better, more effective business. It's that kind of one or two things that you can just pull out of that learning from that individual or person that is the most valuable. So I'd probably give it some more thought and come up with some other interesting people. You know, I know quite a few people in completely other industries that I've just met that I find fascinating entrepreneurially that I could certainly bring to the show and we'd have some interesting conversations with.
Yeah, looking forward to that for sure. I think if we both bring up new ideas of different people, I think that's going to be good fun. You mentioned about different podcasts that you listen to. I think for a future episode as well, I think each of us should bring along the top five, not podcast shows, but podcast episodes that have had the biggest effect on our lives. And if we both give that a think about over the next few weeks, then I think that'd be a really good thing. I think last thing for us to talk about on this is what we're going to call this podcast, because we bounced around a couple of names by email. One of my initial favorites was Small Business Large, because my business is smaller, yours is larger, but it's all about taking a small business to a larger empire, depending on what you call as small. You came back with a couple of other suggestions. One of the ones I really like actually was Scale Up Success. But tell me your thoughts on names, whether a name is important. We can change the name. We could carry on calling it the podcast with no name. But tell me your thoughts on names.
I think we can do better than the podcast with no name. I think either of those two are definitely better contenders than that one. Funnily enough, just in business, I don't actually care about names that much. I don't give them much thought, and I don't think they're that important, because I think it's everything else, the content within that makes a difference. Obviously, you don't want to have something that kind of says one thing and does another. That's just confusing. But yeah, I'm totally happy to go with yours or mine or something in between. So I'm going to leave that one up to you. That's you've got the decision making power there to label.
It's funny that you mentioned that about names, because if you think back over some of the music bands that have been really successful over the years, you know, you look at something like U2, if U2 was created in some X Factor setup or something like that, then nobody would ever call the band U2. They'd call it something like One Direction, of course, because One Direction is more marketable. But you know, U2, or I don't know, going back even further, like UB40 or bands like that, they were successful bands, but not because of the name. They were successful because of the people in the bands and what they did, the music they created, and how they took their bands forward. And I think that some of these people that are super successful in life, in whatever field it is, when you look at their lives, they never just kind of, or hardly ever just made it lucky. there's a whole world in the personality behind that person that is inherently different to the rest of us. The musician megastar is the person who was staying up until 5 o'clock every night playing the guitar or playing the piano. They were deeply passionate about what they did, and that led them to create the things that they did. They weren't working on their things from like 10 till 3 and then taking an early afternoon off and chilling out at the pool and then just happened to become mega famous or successful. So I share your thoughts about a name. We'll choose a name, yeah. But in the meantime, we'll go with that.
It's that interesting point, though, and I hear this a lot, and we'll probably cover this in one of the podcasts because I'm no doubt going to pull out a podcast that kind of covers this. But it's that original motivation as well. If your motivation is money, you're never quite as successful as if it's something that you can be passionate about. And for me, I find that I'm most passionate about creating businesses. I absolutely love that. It doesn't matter what they are. I've done things in different industries, but the actual concept of creating a business, an organization of people that are all set in a particular direction, all kind of fighting for a particular goal or objective is such a rewarding thing. And it just so happens that money then takes care of itself, or it has always done for me in what I've been doing as a result. But, you know, I've never created a business or been involved in a business where money was the kind of starting point. I think it's the biggest or quickest route to failure you can possibly have. It's that passion piece that you talked about of actually caring, wanting to make a difference and you know, feeling like this is something that you were there to do that drives you on, that gets you up at kind of 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, like I often do, and start working straight away. It's not because I have to, it's because I want to. I want to get that thing done. I want to get to the next bit and see what happens there. So yeah, I think it's all in the process, but motivation would be a good one for the future in terms of why would I create a business and what motivates people to do so, because you see a lot of people build companies or try and build companies and fail. And I think a lot of the time that comes from, you know, not having the passion, but thinking that they can make a million or 10 million out of it instead. And I don't know if there's too many people that have had that objective that have ever got to that goal.
Well, clearly there's a future podcast episode in there as well, which is what does success really look like for each individual? Because it's going to be different for everybody. And clearly money's not it. Dan, let's leave it there for this episode. We'll put links to both of our LinkedIn profiles in the show notes for this. So if anybody wants to connect with us outside of this podcast, then totally good. But next episode coming up soon. Dan, thanks for being here. It's good to record episode number one.
Thanks, Simon. I enjoyed it.